biases are socially shaped and conditioned. To give Danny Kahneman his fair shake, it's dang hard to see them at work in us. Plus, it's risky to be perceived as unaligned, and it's often dangerous to go against our tribe's accepted biases. Welcome back to Business Second Opinion Podcast. We're always excited to bring you another episode. But first, we want to thank our sponsor for Business Second Opinion, Guayaki. I'm still working through my case of lemon elation from my local grocery store, and man, is it good. Through this challenging time, Guayaki continues to brew enlivening beverages from a naturally caffeinated and nourishing leaf from a species of holly that you all know is called mate. It contains 24 vitamins and minerals, 15 amino acids, and abundant polyphenols. We hope you're going to check out this great beverage with your friends and family, and let us know what you think. Business Second Opinion Podcast digs deep to explore questions about business and business practice. In the process of examining them, we give you a second opinion, usually a contrarian opinion, but one that's well-tested and proven to give you the outcomes you want without the nasty side effects. And by the way, if you want to learn more about how to work more closely with us, stay tuned at the end of the show. I'm Zach Swartout. And with me, as always, is Carol Sanford, our in-house positive contrarian, responding to big, hard questions with a radically different take. Hey, Carol.
Hi, Zach.
So last episode, we started tackling the kind of thinking that makes us blind to other ways and perspectives of seeing the world. Moreover, actually, it keeps us from being able to adequately assess our impact and the various effects we have and create for others. So today, we have a request from, wait for it, me, to take on a tough and thorny subject of racism, which, as we all know, is not new, but vividly apparent in this moment in history. And more specifically, I actually want to put our eye on how regeneration might help inform us about how to approach it.
Well, I'm excited about doing that. I think you also know that I did 5 morning meetings called The Radical Roots of Racism and How to Design Our Way Out for the Carol Sanford Institute members. I did that in July. And at the end, I'm going to invite any listener on Business Second Opinion who would like to hear that, it's like 4 or 5 hours. At the end of the show, I will tell you how to get access to that. And it's applicable to all kinds of bias, because bias is really the underlying problem, the inability to understand how it works and manage it, and how, therefore, to shift it. So in those morning meetings, I shine a light on that and how it works. But why in the world did you personally come up with this subject, Zach? And why is it a subject for businesses and even beyond? Why does it fit our format?
Well, so I've had a lot of conversations recently with longtime friends and associates from all backgrounds and walks of life who all seem to be struggling with how to approach racism in this moment. So I think we can all agree that racism is bad, but the solutions that seem to be rising up are kind of baked in the same polarized mindset that got us into this predicament in the first place. It's funny how that's always the theme that we come back to. So I was hoping we could explore it a bit together with our listeners, how a lens like regeneration might help.
Yes, and I agree with you. I think it's a very important subject, and we do need to lay a little foundation. So one thing is I would put out before we dive into this is remembering regeneration is a paradigm and a worldview that's based in living systems. So in other words, it's how life works with how the world makes things work together when all the entities involved get affected in a way that moves them forward and all stakeholders.
Yeah. So before we go flying head first into this, though, let's remind people of what we mean when we say regeneration. But as we discussed before, lots of people say something is regenerative, but let's help delineate what a living systems definition of regeneration is.
Yeah. And of course, based on what we were doing last time, you have to step out. And you already said this, a two-term kind of statement where it's racism and not racism, as though you could divide it that clearly. I'm going to give our listeners an 8-word description that I've been testing and playing out with people of a living systems view of regeneration. And so people are able to differentiate it from the other things that they're seeking to do good in the world with, circular economy, donut economy, sustainability. And I'm hoping it'll help us be able to look at how we can apply it then to racism. So here we go. I'll go slow. It's about a paradigm that sees all of life as evolving capacity for essence expression, enabling systems actualization. Now, that's like three phases, right, which are all linked. What seems relevant to you right now relative to racism or other isms?
Yeah, so let me take evolving capacity for a second, because that's really what's most front of my mind. So we actually had a change agent development weekend not long ago with you. And the biggest thing that shifted for me over the course of that weekend was being able to see myself judging people as wrong or bad or less than in all these various circumstances. So shifting from that to understanding that what I saw was actually a capacity in me that needs to evolve and be developed, to then be able to see a capacity in someone else that could be evolved or developed. So not to mention all the stuff that I was judging these other people for, by the way, as I was kind of reflecting on all this, was actually really all about me anyways, more than it was about them.
Right. And the other thing is really true is often people are doing the best they can with what they can see and how they can see. So that evolving capacity, as you just said, is really core, starting with ourselves. Secondly, we base what we do on the idea of each individual, each life form actually has an essence. It's unique. So even if I can say I'm Caucasian, which I am, or one of my students can say I'm Mexican or I'm African, what we're talking about is they are not categorizable by any of those things. They are very much a unique individual seeking to express themselves in the world. So if we're working regeneratively, we're doing this evolving capacity you picked up, enabling them to be able to express their essence. Now, the third idea that's in that definition is that it's not just for themselves. It's not back to self-actualizing. It's what we call system actualizing, because we know that racism and all the isms are embedded in the system. And if we want to be able to remove all those and grow beyond our biases, we have to understand how to work with systemic actualization and have it become what it can truly be to make it all work.
And this is the core of why I like doing what we do here at Business Second Opinion. We take on these divisive topics and attempt to show how to avoid making them more divisive. Because as you all heard in our Beyond Polarities podcast, approaches that are two-term fundamentally polarize and escalate rather than offering a third way or reconciling path. Polarized thinking also has this crazy propensity to lead us most often to fall into our biases, which is why you see people going through anti-bias trainings and coming out with lots more prescribed procedures, but still the same old biases.
So maybe you should talk for just a moment, especially since you wanted to do this particular subject, about how did you come to think about bias?
Yeah, totally. So biases psychology is a fairly new conversation in business and organizations. Daniel Kahneman, who we've spoken about before, basically wrote the book, so to speak, on understanding biases called Thinking Fast and Slow. His research, for which he and his colleague Amos Tversky won a Nobel Prize, explores the many facets of the fallibility of the human mind in decision-making and how we constantly fall victim to our own internal biases. Famously, he also stated publicly that he's applied exactly zero of his research to himself, as he believes that biases can't be controlled, fixed, or managed. But I don't think that we actually agree with that estimation here, Carol. Do you? And if it's a paradigm to be shifted, I'm pretty sure we're the ones to do it. So let's think about how we can do that, though.
Yeah, I definitely don't agree with him. I think we have to have a bias. And one thing, we can't have no reference point. But we need to learn to be mindful of them. So I don't agree. I do believe with you that we need to understand what we call a regenerative paradigm and worldview of that, and not have a program or a practice, which it sounds like what he might be trying to avoid, and not necessarily lead in some way to just another behavioral change, right? It's really about shifting how we see the world. And we know a little bit of this. If you travel from country to country, or you have members of your family who you don't see very often, you can go, wow, why in the world can they interpret things that way? So they see things differently. It really is a radical switch to go to a regenerative worldview or paradigm in how we look at a situation. And people don't notice they have a worldview, so they can't tell they switch. And it's hard to do. It takes learning to work. Well, I call it a Galilean task. What does that mean to you, Zach?
Yeah, so Galileo, for those not familiar, came up with the concept of heliocentrism, to the dismay of the Catholic Church at the time. And it turns out, as we all know now, we aren't the center of the universe. So to keep it brief, his findings were investigated by the Roman Inquisition in 1615 and found to be absurd and foolish, I think is the direct quote. So because his view basically completely contradicted their scriptural view of humans in the world, he was tried as a heretic, forced to recant, and spent the rest of his life under house arrest, which sounds like a blast. In short, shifting paradigms isn't easy work. It took another 500 years or so for his view of the universe to become accepted.
Yeah. And here's one we're in now. Oh, in fact, we've been in it for a while. So it is not generally understood that we have known for 125 years and counting that we are misinterpreting how change in reality works. And we've learned it from physics down to spiritual teachers. So Einstein and his students call this moving from a classical Newtonian view of reality to a quantum view. And this movement is critical to understanding how we end up with biases and how to work on them.
Right. And as we know, biases are socially shaped and conditioned. To give Danny Kahneman his fair shake, it's dang hard to see them at work in us. Plus, it's risky to be perceived as unaligned, and it's often dangerous to go against our tribe's accepted biases. So what's the shift that's needed now then, Carol? And what does moving from Newtonian to quantum mean exactly?
All right. So this is fun. One of my favorite things to talk about, because I have a great metaphor. So we're going from directly working on something to indirectly. Now, think about if you've ever played pool or billiards, you have a cue stick. That's you. And you want to move someone else away from what they're seeing. That's the cue ball. And you have an idea about which pocket you want to put it in. So you have this image of that you can actually, with your cue stick, hit the thing that you want to move and put it in a pocket if you can just find the right mastery of that process. That's the classical Newtonian view. It's a billiard ball theory of change. The quantum theory of change is about that you actually can't transfer that metaphor into how humans work or living systems work. You can't even really do it with a cue stick and a cue ball, because we know how often we hit it and it goes somewhere else. What that theory is based on is an implicate order of a theory of change. That is, that things are happening long before we can see them and they're manifest, before they come into existence. They start in our mind. They start in how we see the world. We have all these filters, and it changes what we actually can do. And we actually are not very good at being able to control how we're thinking, what we're thinking, but we think somehow we can fix it all with this direct method of new laws, new programs directly.
But Carol, how do you work on it indirectly? And isn't that too slow? Wait, yeah, but okay. As I say that, I think the decades and generations and centuries of racism, even with people working hard to rid our societies of slavery and inequity and bias, show us that we aren't moving swiftly at all to resolve these issues. And slavery even still exists, which is really crazy to think about. So now that I think about it a little bit more, what is actually making me think the Newtonian way you describe of working on laws and programs, for that matter, aimed directly at racism, is actually supposed to be fast?
Right. Well, because we've been conditioned to think that we have to touch something for it to move. And if we can touch it right, it will move. But I've discovered that it takes very, very short periods of time when we give up this direct classical method. When we try and work on bias, racism, ageism, genderism is actually very slow, as you just came to see. And that people can learn to see their own biases, not if they're being given another program and told, here, do it this way, but being taught to see it for themselves and collectively come up with a way to do it. And by the way, this is not just a theory. Because even in some of the most difficult situations where we had protests in the across the U.S. in the 60s, and in South Africa in the mid-90s, moving out of apartheid, we use this indirect rather than direct method. And I tell a bunch of those stories in my books, like the No More Feedback has a lot of them, and the Responsible Business. You get everything unstuck pretty quickly with the indirect method, and then you're able to keep changing, and you can do it pretty fast.
So I remember you writing about them, actually, in No More Feedback. But Carol, I'm sure that our listeners are saying the same thing right now, which is, what's the key to a kind of disruption that doesn't escalate things as these direct methods do?
All right. So indirect means you work on three things. You work on capability of everyone all the time. You have that as an ongoing practice. You work on culture, not directly, because most people say, well, you move people around, you change who's in places, and you can change the culture. No, all of that just happens within a culture. So you learn to work on it indirectly, and you learn to work on the strangest thing of all, which is consciousness. The ability of people to stand outside, see them themselves, understand their effects, as you were talking about when we first started here, which brings along with it, the minute we can have that observation of self, we begin to have more conscience about what we're doing. It's like it awakens and gives the method for doing that. And with that goes conscientiousness is brought into play.
Got it. So I take capability, culture, and consciousness, and I apply it directly to racism, right?
No. You don't apply it directly. It's applied to working on something else. That's what makes it indirect. And specifically, what you work on is something that everyone needs doing. So let me go back to my Colgate-Palmolive South Africa. Stelio said, though he was the general manager, said, let's build a great country while we build a great company. And that indirect of the country especially awakened everyone. And that work is done with a regenerative paradigm where I mean you're creating capability, the first of the three, to be able to see systems at work and what are the essence of them. So you learn to see townships at work. You learn to see oral health at work, all from being understand what's the essence of oral health. We created a very fast transformation when people saw that they needed the Black Africans to be able to achieve business and national goals and to design a way to get there rapidly. I have an article on this process in more depth. Also, I did in Conscious Company earlier in the summer, and I'll add it to the show notes. And another one, I've got two or three. I'll post them all.
Okay, but I'll bite then. So how do you change culture, though?
Well, we did a series of things. And again, go back to No More Feedback and back to The Responsible Business, two of my books, where you can get a lot more depth. It was extensive what we did. And the key was monthly education and development sessions. So remember, we're working on capability where people were applying whatever they learned there. So I showed up monthly for a couple of days. And everything they were learning was how to build a great country and a great company, but it was living systems thinking. And so everybody wanted to learn how to do it. They all wanted to participate and be a part of the systems frameworks we were offering that they could tell pretty rapidly was changing what they could see was possible. And here's a big cultural piece. There were many, but one was there was no hierarchy in the learning process. So mostly when you have a new training, and this wasn't training, come in, you cascade it. The top gets it, and then the next level, so the top doesn't look stupid. They already understand. Nope, everybody was in a room together. That was a radical culture shift. And you met Stelio Sesos, who was the general manager, and he was in all those events as a learner and a co-creator, not wearing his hat as the general manager, unless somebody needed to spend money. But that was only because the bylaws of the corporation require he sign off, and he was in it, so he knew exactly how it was working. But what did you think of Stelios?
My wife and I actually met Stelios, who's a white Greek national, when we were traveling to Athens in 2015. So this is a pretty fun story. So we're out for dinner, and we immediately were borderline interrogating poor Stelios to tell us what it was like working with you back then. Like, what was this Colgate factory first like in Athens, where you started first, before you went over to South Africa? And so when we asked him how he knew the culture had changed there, he said, specifically, during the time that you and he worked there, you guys took it from one of the most divisive and worst performing factories to one of the highest performing. However, he knew that the culture had shifted because it continued to sustain, actually, after the two of you left. And the factory in Athens continues to be one of the highest performing factories in Colgate's portfolio to this day. And so I've heard you, Carol, talk about how fast the change took hold. And Stelios actually said it happened so fast it made his head spin. So how does consciousness work as an indirect method, though?
Yeah. All right. So that's our third, right? So we've got the capability of meetings. We change who's in them and how you work. And then we come back to how in the world you really work on consciousness and why is it indirect? Well, I mean, you can think about for a moment that if you're working on even, let's just say, learning meditation or learning reflection, it slows everything down. It has you watch yourself. If you can do that and you have a framework to assess how your thinking is working, it begins to move the biases out. You're getting unstuck to shift the paradigm. And suddenly you can see things that you could not see before. You have a new framework for now interpreting what the new things those are you're seeing. So, for example, most of the people who were in the Colgate Greek business and who were in the South African business, and we had far more than the factories. We had all the salespeople from across Europe and then across Africa. They were given a new framework that had them learn to see the essence of things working, like a production process or a sales process. And they had never actually thought, they had procedures for selling, procedures for running lines. And instead, they began to image it as a living, working process. It allowed them to start to design changes that worked from a much better way of seeing the world. It shook loose their old mental models, their old methods, their structures. And it's very hard to do those kind of shifts if you're attached to an old idea. So we worked hard on any time they were working on something, they had to work on it in a new way. That's another culture thing. You can't use the method you used to do this. You're given a new framework, which, by the way, is a living systems framework. And therefore, you get unstuck. Because if not, here is my metaphor for this. If you want to create a culture change and you don't do all the stuff I just talked about, you will be doing what I call beat to fit, beat it until the shape fits, and paint it to match. So you know how often a new program comes into companies and you think, nothing changed. Yeah, there is a new language. They just renamed it. But it's really the old way of working. So we were in these meetings running all three of these indirect processes, the capability building, which spread out into the townships, into their homes, into councils that they were running. We're working on culture by changing how we introduce this, who got to make decisions. And we didn't get rid of any hierarchy. I don't do that. And we worked on building capacity for consciousness, which did not stay within the walls only of Colgate. It actually changed much of South Africa's transformation.
Yeah, so it sounds like there's actually another key here. And if I'm following, the new culture is one of being self-directed and self-reflective.
Yeah.
And has little or no external input from people other than themselves. So the culture moves from one that's externally determined to internally self-managing. And the organization itself has a shared corporate direction, which we've talked about before, like strategic pursuits and intentions. But the sessions you spoke of let them set their own path. And why, and more importantly, how, then, does this actually connect back to and undermine racism and bias?
Right. So I want to just say one other thing about what you said, and then I'll answer that. This was each individual not having performance reviews and feedback, not external. They were learning to do that for themselves in the context of the strategic direction, and that's how they set their own path. Now, what was amazing about how this was working is because, as you pointed out, it was self-directed, is we were able to put in place what is called essence expression processes, where you wrote a plan for what you were going to do, and you explained how all of it was going to serve where the business was going, where the township was going. And it was uniquely you bringing something forward, but it was working on something everybody agreed needed to be worked on. Plus, we scraped away a lot of those toxic practices I threw offhandedly, like feedback and so forth. And it allowed essence of each individual to shine. And as we know, essence is the ultimate diversity, and everybody getting to pick their own contribution and plan is the ultimate inclusion.
Yeah, like core competencies, right?
Yeah.
So actually, we did an earlier podcast on how to see that ultimate diversity is essence and ultimate inclusion is each unique contribution. And we'll put that again in the show notes. It's number 136.
Yeah, good idea. The other thing I want to offer people, and I said I would mention this after we got a little further along, is I did two sets of video recordings on how to do this indirect work. They were 27 days, and you can go learn about how we built some of the capability inside of South Africa, how we did DuPont and Colgate and Google and, you know, all over. And the way you do that is you go to Facebook and you look up the Regenerative Life Community. It's a Facebook group. Now, you can click to join, but you have to answer the questions that pop up afterwards or you don't get in. I don't go look at it, so you're just going to sit there never getting in. Secondly, I did one called The Radical Roots of Racism. And you probably can hear that now, what we're talking about. The roots of racism are in this bias and in our attachments. So you have to get my permission to get into that one. So send me a note at carol@carolsanford.com and I'll tell you how to get in.
So in summary, we need to stop using the billiard ball theory of change.
Yeah.
As in work on the issue or problem directly, intensely, and even pervasively. Rather than working on systems indirectly. Start instead with the implicate order that is at work before it's explicit in existence. In other words, work instead on the capability, culture, and consciousness rather than procedures and problems.
Yeah. So evolve capacity. Remember I said this is the beginning. Here's what a regenerative worldview would be on everything. Is it's about evolving capacity of all parties and all entities so they can do their own essence expression through taking a systems actualization approach, working with all of Colgate to transform townships, the country, the company, all of the people in it through their own expression, through building their capability to serve the system. And bias shifting is done indirectly rather than working on this indirect way. And instead it's working on where you have a shared business direction. That's the system actualization that takes everyone to pull it off. In our development sessions that I led, we held full day and more, many times monthly, everyone was applying what they were learning directly to the business from their own unique perspective. And this is key. It's shifting the capability to think differently and manage the mind doing the work that can now see how it relates to other things. It's like a Trojan horse of sorts. It can't not spill over. I have never had a company in my 44 years where the people in it didn't suddenly see they needed to become more ecologically sound, more equitable in how they work. To have this indirect effect, you really have to work on it indirectly, and then people will be able to see race relation among workers. And I know that may be disturbing to people, but I've got so many years of doing it, I know. And in fact, Mandela gave us what he named the Constitution Award for supporting the implementation of the new constitution for the new South Africa in 1/10 of the time we were required to do it. We did it in 6 months. Instead of 5 years, we moved Black Africans to leadership roles that matched the ethnic and racial mix of the population. So it was very, very, very fast to work indirectly.
Carol Sanford Institute has been offering developmental communities for 40 years with online versions for over a decade now, so we're getting pretty good at it. What we're offering is a set of free morning meetings where you look at how to transform uncertainty into action based on living systems thinking approaches, which inform our lives in times of crisis, your daily decisions and actions, and how you can actually help others. So search on Facebook for the Regenerative Life Communities Group and answer the questions and then hop in. Join Carol's newsletter also at carolsanford.com to get more information on upcoming events.
And we run a large number of communities. We have some for business groups, some for change agents, and we have a new one. If you or know someone who's in the world of education, and that can be formal, like universities or primary school or homeschooling or unschooling, or necessarily school related, like you're working inside of a corporation or you have a private kind of coaching practice or something that has education in it, you are welcome to come join. And this community is established to help work with the kind of epistemology we've been describing here. How you can educate people so they get unstuck and you can work indirectly. You move to a more experiential, developmental way based on the first principles of regeneration. Go check out seed, S-E-E-D hyphen communities.com to learn more. And it's then under the tab called Regenerative Life Offerings.
Dear listeners, we need you. Four ways that we'd like to suggest. Recommend an article or business practice on which you want a second opinion. SurveyMonkey is the place to do that. Second, tell your friends to listen to us. We want to triple our audience this season, so help us get the word out. Third, please feel free to give us a review, because people do read those and it helps let people know what we do and why it's good. And fourth, if you can help us fund the production costs of our show, that would be great. It costs about $10,000 a year, so for technical help, platforms, recording equipment, and all the goodies. So on our website, there is a way to donate once you pledge via Patreon for recurring support based on an amount of your choosing, or just click the button one time.
Yeah, it gives you lots of options. So I hope also you do keep listening to Business Second Opinion and you give us your ideas about what you want us to work on with the regenerative paradigm and the regenerative worldview. My new book gives you an opportunity to actually also get involved in doing a lot of this kind of work. And all you're doing is just buying books, either a few or a lot. I can get you a 50% discount if you buy 100 and want to be in a book club.
And thanks again to our sponsors at Guayaki in your pursuit of regeneration with high integrity.
Thanks to NumiT. Every time they sponsor our Business Second Opinion show notes, and Babson College still continues to support our summit, which is coming up in November. And if you want to know more about that, you can send me an email at carolsanford.com. If you have a business team, think about coming and joining us and check out more of the show notes and details about us on the Business Second Opinion website. And thanks so much to all of you for joining.
This has been Business Second Opinion.